kid really gets to do is go back to kicking the kid's class.
You can't sleep. The rest of the
teachers have to go to chapter 5. We're going to take a break from here just for 1 week.
One week.
Next week, we'll talk about Moses and Abel Moses. But we're going to take a quick break over to Jesus and teach you the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5. In his series, The Power of Vision, futurist Joel Gardner recounts the story of a sage walking along the beach. And as one on the beach, he notices this young man doing something that really caught his attention. He would walk along the beach, and he'd go and grab something, and he'd pick up, and he'd throw it along. He tried to get the other way. So he kept doing this over and over. He'd go and pick up something, throw it along. And again, the best thing was when he went over to this young man, he said, "What on earth are you doing?" And the young man said, "I'm saving starfish by throwing them back in the ocean."
He said, the sun's coming out, the tide's going out, and if I don't act quickly, they're all going to die. And the sage kind of chuckled as what he thought or perceived to be a fatal effort. And he said, son, there are thousands of miles of beach. There are probably tens, if not hundreds of thousands of starfish laying out there right now. You can't possibly get to them all. What difference can you make? And after listening politely, the young man bent over, picked up another starfish, and threw it out over the waves. And he came back to the sage and said, "I made a difference for that one." And ladies and gentlemen, that is the picture of the church. The world looks at us and says that there's 8 billion people scattered on this planet. You will never be able to reach them all. What's the point? But for every single person who enters to Jesus, we can say, "I made a difference for that one. I made a difference for that one. I made a difference for that one. We made a difference for that one."
Week after week, month after month, year after year, we're called to make a difference.
John Maxwell, in his book, The 21 Year Review of Loss of Leadership, said, have you ever thought about what separates leaders to achieve victory from those who suffer defeat? What does it take to be a winner? He said, it's hard to put a finger on a single wall of leaders. Every leadership is different. Every crisis has its own challenges. He said, but I think that victorious leaders share an ability to accept defeat. In other words, they hate to lose. He said, they figure out what must be done in order to achieve victory, and they go after whatever it takes attitude. During World War II, when Germany began bombing England, one man rallied the British people.
You know his name? Winston Churchill.
Nothing great is ever accomplished until we develop a whatever it takes attitude. For example, if you want to lose weight and get in shape, you won't begin seeing progress until you determine I'm going to do whatever it takes to get in shape.
If you want to get out of debt and stop having financial difficulty, nothing will change until you say, I'm going to do whatever it takes to stop living this crazy life I'm living. I'm going to quit paying for cable TV. I'm going to quit subscribing to things that I don't need. I'm going to tie. I'm going to prosper for it.
But you have to do what it takes. No matter what it is,
if you want your business to improve, it's not going to improve until you say, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make this business grow.
You want to accomplish some goal in your personal life?
It will not happen until you say, okay, do whatever it takes to reach that goal. You want to have a better marriage? It's not going to happen until you decide I'm going to do whatever it takes to have a great marriage.
I say that someone thinks, well, my spouse will never do that.
And that's the reason you don't have a better marriage.
It's not their fault.
It's yours.
You have to determine that you'll do whatever it takes, no matter what they do.
That's what it takes. If you want to improve your relationship with kids, guess what? It will happen to you, whatever it takes. You fill in the blank. Whatever it is you want to accomplish is not going to happen by accident. You're not going to wake up tomorrow morning and go, oh, everything in my life has changed. It's better now than it's ever been. No, you've got to determine, I'm going to do whatever it takes. And you know what's interesting about this? Jesus called us to that type of life.
He did.
Your greatest sermon ever preached. It's called the Sermon on the Mount. We find it in Matthew chapter 5, and Jesus calls us to live a whatever it takes kind of life. We'll begin reading Matthew chapter 5, verse 38. Would you please stand for the reading of God's word? Matthew 5, verse 38. You have heard that it was said, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you, take your shirt and your coat over as well. If anyone forces you to go one mile, go with them two miles. Give to the one who asks you. Do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. And maybe you're looking at it and say, Pastor, I didn't see the words, whatever it takes. Oh, it's there. You're about to see them. I want to zero in on one verse that summarizes Jesus' sermon. In verse 41, he says, and if anyone forces you to go with them one mile, go with them two miles. To understand this, you've got to have a little background about what Jesus is talking about here.
It's one of the greatest Greek experts I know, Dr. John MacArthur.
He said this. Rome gave a soldier the right to force a civilian to carry his backpack for a Roman mile. It's a little slighter than our own mile. The law designed to benefit soldiers, not only the laws great inconveniences to civilians, but was made even more despicable by the fact that the oppressed were made to carry the equipment and the weapons of their oppressors. Outside of combat, the Roman soldiers probably never hated it when he was forced to carry his backpack. So what was Jesus saying in verse 41? He was essentially saying that his disciples were called to a higher standard and to a different attitude than the rest of the people in the world. His followers and his disciples, he said, I want you to go a second mile.
You know, all the people in the world who want to possess whatever it takes attitude, surely ought to be those of us in the church. We ought to be whatever it takes group of people. Sadly, that's not the case in too many churches or too many Christians. Instead of possessing whatever it takes attitude, we have developed a whatever attitude.
Prove me wrong. I don't need to serve. Whatever. I don't need to do that.
Whatever.
I don't need to go to church on Lord's Day. Whatever.
I don't need to.
Why are we making a difference in the world?
Why are we accomplishing what Jesus told us to accomplish? Because nothing great will ever be accomplished until we develop whatever it takes attitude. So let me give you three very principles that we need to learn as a church. This is a natural message. We want to help you preach it and tell you how to go about helping others receive it. All right? Give us a marching orders for the church.
Number one, we need to always do what God ought to do. Always do more than we ought to do. Now some will come and say, well, everyone else is going one mile, I have to do two. Because we belong to Christ. Well, you're not like everyone else.
They just do enough to get by. They just do enough to keep their head above water. They just do enough to keep their head above water. These are the people that arrive for work on time, but they barely get there on time. And then they suck at time. In fact, some are perfected. They mess up so they can punch out in their view in 60 seconds and down the road, right?
Some people like a bunch of good interviews, 60 seconds and down the road, right? Back to somebody who wants to sell their salary, and they make excuses. They do it because it's someone they don't trust, someone they're not quitting, they're not getting away with it. They're just cheating to come out of existence, or cheating themselves because they have to come out of whatever it takes. These are the people who do their job, and that's it. They're not interested in anyone else's job.
On some occasions, they might not be right about it, they'll complain about it, they'll want something in return. And that's not the way Christ followers are supposed to be.
If we're going to develop a different attitude, the type of attitude that Jesus wants us to have, what we call a higher standard, we can't always say that's someone else's job.
No.
Pastor, what are you talking about?
Whatever it is, get out of your head, someone else should do that, and start asking, is there something I can do? And I'm talking about everything. I'm talking about the trash that's on the ground. Pastor, what's the trash?
No, Jesus does.
I mean, are you getting this?
See, if you're not doing good with the little things, forget the big things.
Jesus said, if you're faithful in the little things, I'm going to give you big things. But if you're unfaithful with the little things, you'll be unfaithful with the things, and I'm just not going to give them to you.
So we're called to different lifestyles. We're called to do more than we ought to do. But see, just enough people, they just do enough to keep their marriage alone. They just do enough to keep the kids from bolting in the house.
They do just enough to get by. They're just enough type of people, and they're finding just enough life.
But here's what I want you to understand. Jesus called every single one of his followers to a higher standard, to be whatever it takes kind of people. And when we do that,
That's how we'll impact the world. But let's forget about the world for just a moment. That's how we'll impact our families. That's how we'll impact the place where we work. That's how we'll impact our neighbors.
Listen to me. Anyone can go to any church, anywhere, and sit in the service and enjoy the entertainment.
But it takes a follower of Jesus to build a church. It takes a committed believer to make a difference. And what I'm asking you to do this morning is to assess your commitment.
Don't be concerned about the commitment of the person sitting in front of you.
Don't be concerned about the commitment of the person sitting behind you. Don't be concerned about the commitment of those in leadership. Don't be concerned about my commitment.
Ask yourself this morning. am I doing what it takes to be a difference maker in this church? And when enough of us answer that question with yes, you'll see a difference in this church.
But if all we do is just enough, it will be enough.
And I understand that's what most churches and most Christians are today.
And Jesus felt that.
So if you get to Bible, you can read verse 43. He said, you've heard that I said, love your neighbor, hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies, and pray for those who persecute you.
Our standard, whatever it takes. So that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his Son to rise on the evil of the good. He says, right on the righteous and the unrighteous. And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others?
Do not even pay attention to that. Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect.
I always laugh when I go to the last verse, but that's what we ought to be striving for.
Thankfully, Jesus will make us perfect, but we need to be striving to be the person he wants us to be.
He's saying, you represent my Father. And because you represent my Father, you have to be different.
You have to live according to a higher standard.
You have to be a whatever-it-takes person.
So number one, always do more than you want to do. Here's number two, always do more than expected.
You see, if Christians don't do what non-Christians do, how can we differ from the world?
By the way, if you want to do a fun social experiment, go to social media. Look at the posts of people who don't go to church. Those who don't know Jesus in their lives. I'm not talking about all of this, just some. Look at the pictures and the posts and the places they go, the things they do, the comments they make, the way they talk, and then after you look at the posts of Christians, of those who clearly tell you they're Christians, and the way they do things, and the things they do, the places they go, the things they say, you'll find very little difference.
And we can't be like the world, Christ, if we're just like the world.
And this is where you get the attention of the world. When you go second mile, when you turn the cheeks, when you do more than is expected.
By the way, these are people who don't need to be told anything.
They look for things. They ask this question, what makes me happy? What can I do now? Where can I help? In Matthew 25, Jesus is talking about the kingdom of heaven and what it's going to be like.
He tells the parables of the first parable, in Matthew 25, he talks about the parable of the ten virgins. You ever read that story? There were five foolish virgins and there were five wise.
And you say, well, who were the wise virgins? Well, they were the ones who had plenty of oil to wait for the bride to come, so that when the marriage ceremony came, they were ready for it.
Who were the foolish ones?
They were the ones who didn't have enough, but they thought they had enough.
We're fine, they said. We're stocked up.
But then they're all ran out, and they had to get more.
And when they were gone, that's when the bride came. And the ceremony started, and they missed it.
And Jesus was talking about heaven.
That's how serious this is.
There are people who think, there's enough work done, I'm not going to do anymore.
And they missed it.
Are you following me?
And they tell us, remember that one?
He said, again, it will be like a man on a journey. He calls his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one he gave five bags of gold, to another two bags, and to another one bag, each according to his ability.
Then he went on his journey. The man who received five bags of gold went at once, and put his money to work and gave five bags more.
So also the one with two bags of gold gave two more.
But the man who received one bag dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money.
He just has this idea. I'll take care of it. Whatever God's given me, I'm going to go wherever I can dig a little hole, I'll just keep sitting, I'll put it right there, and when he comes back, I'll give back to them.
All right, Verse 19. After a long time, the master's servant returned and said, "Come with them." The man who received five bags of gold brought the other five. Master, he said, "You entrusted me with five bags of gold. See, I gained five more." His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." The man who bagged also came to the master, he said, "You entrusted me with two bags of gold. See, I gained two more." His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness."
In other words, mine is yours. Enjoy. Then the man who received the one bag of gold came. Master, he said, "I knew you were a hard man. And I will thank you for holding your own. See, you're the one who has the soul, and can't write the answer. Well, then you should have put my money in the house of the bankers, so when I return the payment, please receive back with interest. Why did you give me my money in the bank? At least I could have gotten some interest out of it." The master says, "The master was furious at such a terrible way to live. It's incredible to be cautiously like that.
If you knew I was after the best, why didn't you trust the least? The least you could have done would have been to invest in some of the bankers where I could have gotten the interest. And then he says in verse 28, "So take the bag of gold from him, give it to the one who has 10 bags. For whoever has will be given more, and they'll have abundance. Whoever does not have even what they have will be taken from them. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And you understand this parable has nothing to do about gold. It's not talking about money. Jesus relates this to the second coming, but it has nothing to do with money. So he has to talk about the whole idea of the lives we have, very seriously. He's talking about what we have, what we can do, how we can spend our lives, how we can invest our time, how we use our talents.
And he's called us to be second-mile people, who do more than we ought, and who do more than is expected.
Every follower of Christ is called to do that. Not just the pastors, not just the elders, not just the deacons, not just the teachers. Everyone's called to do that. Whether you've got 10 talents or 5 talents or 1 talent, here's a question for you. Are you a whatever-it-takes kind of person? Or have you got caught up in the whatever mentality? Jesus calls us to live in our hands. And we want to live our lives in such a way. And we want to be a church that lives in such a way that the world sits up and takes notice. People in our community ought to be saying, "Can you believe what that church is doing now? Do you see what they've done for kids?" Do you know those crazy people that my church has done for teenagers? Have you heard what they've done for single moms? Have you heard what the church has done for missionaries? And that's what Jesus wants. He wants us to be a whatever-it-takes follower of His. He wants us to become a church where we do more than we want.
Where we do more than is expected, and here's number three, always submit. That's literally what Jesus has been saying here. When someone forces you to go one mile, go two. And when you do that, you're setting pace. Jesus never called his church to be a thermometer.
He calls to be thermostats.
A thermometer can tell you the atmosphere of the room, right? But a thermostat determines the atmosphere of the room.
So sometimes people say,
isn't that exciting?
Great. Glad you can tell the condition.
Now, how about setting the condition?
Someone says, not in the kitchen. They say that today. But not in the kitchen.
Great.
Glad you can take the temperature.
You know the condition. How about to do something to change it?
Bring it in.
And then take it back off. And they would say, you know what happens next? And that soldier would drop that back down. And before his instructions, he would say, hey, where are you going to go now? And he said, I'm coming up for the first mile marker. Just keep going. Pick up your pace, go even further.
And you move that second mile.
And then after you've done the second mile, then you take that back off.
And Jesus is going to look at that soldier.
He says, you're different than everyone else.
Nobody does this.
What is it about you?
And when he asks that question, you tell him, you belong to me.
You tell him, you're my followers.
You know, the sad thing, folks, there are a lot of people out there who call themselves Christians. And they give Jesus a bad name because people judge him by us.
When we're rooted away from the rest of it, when we're always right in the lane, and we're not doing our job, you know what happens? I want to get Facebook messages and website messages emailed out. We ask if we have more people in this church that does business than I. Employers always say, man, nobody works like someone who's trying to help me. No one gives me trust like someone who's trying to help me. No one does more work than trying to help me. Because we're doing the setting pace.
You see, God never intended for the church to follow the world. He meant for the church to lead. The church is supposed to respond to the initiate.
We're the trailblazers, not hitchhikers.
We're the urgent, not complacent. We're the orchestrate, not hesitate.
We're the leaders, not followers.
And we'll be people who execute, not make excuses.
The church has always been at her best when she's setting the pace.
And that's what Jesus calls us to do. Listen, pace setters don't lay down on the road. They lead.
Pace setters don't hang around, they head out.
Their favorite word is now.
Their motto is, why not?
And they change the world because they're determined to do whatever it takes.
But think about changing the world for a moment. What about just changing your family, your workplace, your neighborhood, your church?
One person at a time.
Stop being bombers.
Be thermostats.
Stop being part of the problem.
Be a solution to the problem.
Don't be satisfied with the fact that our doors are still open.
Start from whatever you want to see through people. Help me be that kind of person.
Do more than you want to do.
Do more than anyone expects you to do.
And set the pace.
Tom Bellefield used to be the pastor at East Baptist Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. back in 1970s, my youth group was also an old city for the North American Christian Convention, but our youth group is a business church and had such a fantastic youth program. You want us to see what they're doing. The place was just this beehive activity. And when I saw all the people being saved, what they were doing for kids, it got me more excited about their school than ever. I knew why people refer to them as exciting Eastern Baptist Church. Their signs even had sometimes exciting written right before their name. Well, Tom Allen left that church to go become pastor for First Southern Baptist Church in another city in Omaha. And then he became later president of the International Mission Board for Southern Baptist Convention. Quite a guy, great author, a fantastic speaker. He served as a missionary for several years in Africa. And one day his wife, Jeannie, was involved in an accident. One of his children was seriously hurt in that automobile accident. And he received the news when he used to teach at a conference in South Africa. And once he informed about that, when he heard that Beth's oldest daughter was so injured, he needed surgery, he said, get a plane. Flyers to the rarest of Bowie's capital, and place for the best hospital they have. And as he's on the phone, he was just reminded him of the cost to get an airplane, get into the hospital. And he responded, I don't care about the cost. Her life is in the balance. Do whatever it takes. There are thousands of people within the driving distance of this church. Listen, don't tell me driving is your problem. I want to hear that ever again. Don't tell me the location of this place is a problem. I want to hear that again. In our area, around here, the average person drives more than 30 minutes to work every day.
A lot of them drive to Lansing, Detroit, some drive to Flint, some drive to Indiana. If they want to watch the Tigers, they basically drive to Detroit. If they want to have fun, they drive 3 hours to see your point. I don't want to hear 15 or 20 minutes too far to drive to church or to hear the gospel. We have thousands of people within a 30-minute radius of this church. The question of the law is, are we going to do whatever it takes to help them? Their lives, their futures, their eternities hang in the balance. Will we be the whatever it takes church that does what it takes to make a difference in their life? And when I say that, I'm talking about their eternities, their forever lives. Can another church reach them?
Maybe.
But I believe with all my heart this church right here is here for a reason. I believe that God has brought this church through storm after storm, and then we're here for a particular moment, at this being that moment is now. Maybe it's time to kick it out of a maintaining year into a growing year and really make a difference in people's lives. Will we be whatever it takes church to make a difference for them? A business as usual attitude has never accomplished anything good for God. But an attitude that's whatever it takes has, and does, and will. Think about this.